Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning, from Fear the Sword and Hardwood Paroxysm. Today, it's a Mailbag Monday. I'm going to answer your questions. And as a note, this week, there's only one Cavs game. That is going to be Tuesday. It's the preseason finale against the Washington Wizards. It's in Columbus, so if you're in Columbus, you can probably still get tickets or scalp tickets or get them on SeatGeek or whatever. So make sure you do that if you're in the area. It'll be fun. I was there last year covering the game. We'll not be there this year, but it was really fun last year. It was a really cool environment. And if you're in that central Ohio area, even maybe in southeast or southwest Ohio, and you're close, I'd recommend going. And you'll probably get to see LeBron play. You'll actually definitely get to see LeBron play. You'll probably see J.R. Smith play. And that in itself will be pretty cool because that'll be J.R. Smith's first game of the year. The first question comes from James Watson, whose Twitter username is JimRun85. And he said, what's the deal with Larry Sanders? Do you think anyone gives him a shot to come back? Keep up the great work. Love the show. So, first of all, thanks for the praise, James. We're happy to have you as a listener, and we appreciate that. I think the deal with Larry Sanders is that he's probably not going to get a deal right now. I think if he would have gotten a deal, we may have already heard about it. We may have already heard that he had signed somewhere and that he was going to be with the team this upcoming season. I'm still of the opinion that he's probably a better player this year than Birdman if he is, you know, mentally willing to play and he has sort of, knows how to just operate in the NBA now that he has been a little more mentally aware and, obviously that he's a little more mentally healthy, which is obviously the most important thing here. I do think someone will give him a chance. He's just such a talented guy, still in the athletic prime of his life. But I think it's going to have to take the right organization that believes they have the structure, and that I think Larry really seems to want that structure. He said he wanted to play for the Cavs and the Warriors, or like play for a title was kind of his goal. Tweeted out those pictures of a Cavalier and a Warrior from the 80s movie. So I think it's going to have to be the right environment. I could see the Cavs or Warriors both really considering him if they need a center in a little bit, but maybe it's a team like San Antonio. But that seems a little unlikely. Maybe it's Oklahoma City. Maybe it's Boston, or maybe it's someone like Toronto that maybe needs a big. The Raptors to me actually would seem like a good fit. They have a really strong locker room, strong organization. They maybe need a rim protector behind Jonas Valanciunas because they don't have Biombo anymore, and Jakob Poeltl is the backup, and he's a rookie. And rookies in the NBA don't always play that well, so maybe Toronto would make sense. I actually would kind of be intrigued by that fit, but I also, again, I think that if the Cavs decided to get a guy like Larry Sanders, I think he'd be an upgrade over Birdman, provided he, is here to play and he's focused on basketball. This comes from a guy who always seems to ask questions, Kyle Rayner. It was obviously, not his real name, I don't think. Jake said, great J.R. Smith's deal for the Cavs. Was this a smart deal for the Cavs? I think so. I don't think it's 100% an A because you are spending, as we noted on the Saturday show that we did to kind of react to this J.R. news, that it's good to kind of put the Cavs in these high dollar amounts over the next year. Their salaries are going to be incredibly high. They're over $120 million, I think, every year the next 3 years now with JR's money locked in. And that's, that is not a small commitment by any means. But again, at the end of the day, I think for a couple of reasons, I think this is ultimately probably a B deal for the Cavs. And maybe that's grading it a little bit harshly. For one, you get JR in before the start of the year, which I think certainly helps. I think the money is pretty fair for what he deserves and their ability to go sign someone else. $15 million, really, it's really those first 3 years, I think that's fine. I think 3 years with JR is fine. You have probably 3 really good years to chase titles with LeBron. somewhere around that, depending on how he ages and, you know, declines and whatnot. So I think that's a pretty fair amount for JR. You know, the fourth year is not guaranteed. That certainly helps. It means if you decide you need to cut bait or do whatever you need to do with him, you can certainly move on from JR pretty easily after that third year. The money is maybe a tad bit high from what you want to pay. They originally reportedly wanted $10 to $11 million. But 15 is not bad. 15 is not some insane amount that I think hurts them. So I think it's fine. I give it a B. And I think it's just pretty fair. From Chris Barnwell, who you know has been on the show before, he said, "Why am I the best co-host you've ever had? I'll hang up and listen." Chris, I love you, but Ian Levy is the best co-host I've ever had because Ian Levy's the best. So we have Slade, who this is just how he signed his email. "What is Chris Grant's legacy with the Cavs? I saw he was just hired by the Spurs and was just wondering what your opinion of him is." You know, so I think Chris Grant is okay. He deserves credit for drafting J.R. Smith, for drafting Kyrie Irving. He deserves credit for drafting Tristan Thompson. But he also drafted Anthony Bennett, and well, it wasn't a great draft, but he took a guy who busted out and is no longer with the team. He drafted Deion Waiters, who didn't work out, didn't fit with Kyrie. And obviously that wasn't the most ideal pick, but, you know, Bradley Beal's off the board. And, you know, he did what he could, I guess, but missed there. And he didn't really do well in free agency. You know, Earl Clark was his doing. He hired Mike Brown back after Mike Brown was pretty bad, and the Wild Dang trade didn't work. I mean, Chris Grant got Kyrie Irving and he got Tristan Thompson, and that was obviously huge for the Cavs title run. But he doesn't exactly have this great legacy with the Cavs. David Griffin obviously inherited a lot of what he did well and got, but he got LeBron and he won the title and he made those savvy trades and got these trade exceptions. David Griffin has already surpassed what Chris Grant has done as a GM by leaps and bounds. Chris Grant did some things well. He got, again, two guys, but he ultimately, he was kind of a failure, and he got fired for being that and messing up so much. So he's fine. I don't think he's the worst GM in Cavs history. I think he just kind of was there. He messed up, and he got fired, and but he got Kyrie and Tristan Thompson on the team. And, yeah, maybe he deserves some, doesn't deserve all the credit in the world for those picks because they're sort of, they seem like sort of obvious picks in some ways, but he got those guys on the roster, and as the guy making those decisions, he deserves that type of credit for that. But not the best GM the Cavs have ever had. Wasn't particularly savvy in certain areas, but it's good. I feel good that he's back in the NBA. You know, he's been out of actually the NBA since the Cavs fired him during the middle of February 2014. So he's been out of the league for a little bit. The Spurs are a great organization, so if they think he's worth keeping around, good for him. Good for him. He's going to be a scout, so he's not going to be doing a ton necessarily in what he did as a GM, but he's going to be literally scouting guys in the country, in college, and overseas for the Spurs, I think. So maybe just focusing on that will do him well, but good for him getting back in the NBA. You don't ever want a guy to just, you know, never get a job again because of how he did as a GM. Not everyone is meant to be a great GM, and some guys can be good at the other parts of the job. And Grant, you know, obviously with the Hawks for a while, did some good work with the Cavs, so best luck for him in San Antonio. This is from Jeff in Brooksville via email. Favorite young players on other teams? This is a really good question. Guys, I know this is a Cavs podcast, but do you ever have random NBA questions you want answered? Just send them in. I'll probably answer them. I'm a general NBA writer for HP, so I'm happy to answer whatever questions you may have. Even if you want to twist it in and make it a Cavs question, that's cool too. So my favorite young players this year, I'll give you five. Number one, we're going to go D'Angelo Russell. And that's not a great obvious pick, but he, in terms of it being like a niche pick or something like that, but I think he's awesome. I think he's been really fun in preseason. I'm excited to see him post-Kobe under Luke Walton. I'm excited to see what he does. I think they're going to ask him to do some really interesting things, especially if Walton adopts a lot of what Golden State did. So I'm here for D'Angelo Russell year two. I also like Emmanuel Mudiay, another guy that was drafted last year. I think he's got the physical tools to be a really good point guard, and I'm a fan of his. I love Denver. The next guy is Nikola Jokic. I love Jokic. I think he could be a Marc Gasol-type player for them. Really skilled passer, a very skilled scorer on the basket, can maybe hit some threes, which is a very encouraging sign. And I'm a huge fan of what he is and what he could become. I just think he's someone that is going to be a very good player for them, and I think he's the best young player on that team. And I like Moody, like I said, but I think Jokic is clearly the better player there. We'll go next to the Brooklyn Nets, which is really funny to say, but I love Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. I loved him coming out of college, and I'm not a big college basketball guy. As you've heard on the show, you know, I didn't know much about Kay Felder when he came out, but I remember reading about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and what he was and what he, you know, how it looked at some college tape ahead of that draft, and I loved everything I saw. He wasn't a lottery pick because he couldn't shoot in college and really couldn't hit threes even in college, but the guy can impact the game in a way that I think few other defenders have the potential to do. He's going to, if he can stay healthy, he was hurt last year, and he can develop properly under Kenny Atkinson, who's a player development coach, and now is the head coach of the Nets. I think he could be really special talent. He's my favorite young player on that team. They have Caris LeVert, who I also like. Anthony Bennett is there, and I think he maybe could still rebound and become a useful player. But I think Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is going to be awesome. I love his game. And is he going to maybe be as good as a Justice Winslow or someone like that? Probably not, but I think he can be really good. And he's someone, if you ever happen to watch the Nets, to me, he's a reason why you should watch them. Jeremy Lin's going to be good for them. Brook Lopez is good. But the Bennett Redemption Tour, I'm very here for. He's been awesome in the preseason, but it's Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. I think he's great. Lastly, we'll get a little bit of a deep cut here. I love Maurice Sandor. He's not a guy that I think necessarily gets all of the claim, and some of you may not even know who he is, and I like him for kind of a goofy reason. He went to my alma mater, Ohio University. I covered him for 2 years when I was in college. A very nice guy, just a very well-spoken guy, a very worldly guy. He's lived all over the world. He's lived in Japan. He's lived in Spain. He played in Spain last year. And I think he's just a really talented player. He's 6'9". He plays power forward, can play some small ball center. He started to hit the three a little bit, and he's just such a versatile defender, just a smart player who can do so many things. I think he has the future as an NBA player. I really, really believe that he can be a guy who can be a really solid contributor on a good team. He has the skills to defend position, switch everything, be very active. And I think the Knicks got a really good player in him. He's not someone who maybe is going to make the biggest impact right now. I think he might get stuck behind some guys, but if he gets the chance to play, I'm a huge fan of what he could be. And as someone who went to Ohio University, that's my alma mater. Go Bobcats. And it'd be cool to see a guy from my alma mater do really well, and I'm a huge fan of what he could be in the NBA. So to me, that's a really good answer. That, to me, is just kind of my ideal answer there. It's a little bit more biased than I normally would give, but I'm a huge believer in Maurice Sandor. We have another question from James Watson. Don't you think Liggins would be more valuable piece for this team than McRae? His defensive intensity is great. You know, it's tricky because I think McRae definitely has more upside. Liggins doesn't. We kind of know what he is at this point. He's older. He's been around a little bit longer, and he's just kind of there. I don't think he's particularly good, but I'm also not convinced McRae is particularly good either. The point guard experiment with him is over, as we heard from Tyronn Lue last week. So that he's going to have to be a 2 and a 3 for this team. He still has to figure some stuff out defensively. He's kind of thin. I know he got bigger this summer, and we've heard that he's gotten a little bit bulkier, but I'm not totally in love with McRae. I'm not sure there's actually a difference between them, to be honest. Liggins' defensive intensity is great in preseason, but it's preseason basketball. There's a reason he hasn't really stuck in the NBA before, and that the Cavs are getting him on so easily, and maybe have if they want to keep him, they keep him. To me, McRae offers something more. McRae offers something potentially a lot better. And to me, I think he's the guy you want to keep around just because I think he has higher upside to become something better. And the Cavs do love Jordan McRae. They've invested a lot of time in him. They've invested Phil Handy's time in him. Shumpert and Kyrie are tight with him. He's going to be around. And I think as a scorer, he's definitely better than Liggins. You hope he improves on defense. But again, you should not take a ton away from preseason. Just because Liggins has looked really good in preseason, I'm not sure either of them are actually going to be actually good rotation players this year. But it could be wrong. We're always wrong. Always wrong before. And being willing to be wrong is a good thing. From Wes Goldberg, the host of Locked On Heat, he said, should Griffin be fired if he doesn't sign Mario Chalmers? He's obviously referring to David Griffin. Also, go check out Wes's podcast with David Ramil. It's always really good. He's covering a very interesting Heat team, so you should totally go check that out. You know, I don't have a ton of expectations with Mario Chalmers being signed? And this is, I think, kind of a joke question, but it definitely is kind of a joke question. But if they're going to sign someone, it probably should be Chalmers. I think if he's healthy, he's better than Norris Cole. So it is what it is there. I don't really have a huge take here. I guess I would like to see Chalmers in a Cavs uniform if he's healthy. I think he'd probably be better than Felder. It gives you some insurance there. Complicating this is the whole Mo Williams thing because he's technically still on the roster. He seems disgruntled with the team if you saw his Instagram post. Also, LeBron probably needs someone to yell at this year. And Rio would be the guy that he got yelled at in Miami a lot. And he would be the guy, I think, to get yelled at on this Cavs team if he ends up being on the team. Griffin, it's something... would it be interesting to see if he... it would be interesting to see if they do sign somebody, if it is Chalmers, and if they don't end up getting Chalmers, why they don't get him. It'd be something worth noting, especially if he ends up being able to play off his Achilles injury and is able to actually be a useful NBA player this year, because as we know, Achilles injuries are really, really tough to gauge, and they can really change careers. Last question today comes from my dad, actually, so shout out to my dad. What is the team's expectation for Shumpert this year? What are the Cavs' expectations for Amon Shumpert this year after he didn't live up to expectations last year? It's a good question. We're going to do more on Shumpert in the coming weeks, but give you the quick answer here with that. With Shumpert, I think the hope is that he last year was really, you can write off last year due to injuries. I think in an ideal world, you can say last year was because he was hurt. Last year is because he really struggled to get in a groove all year because of those injuries. And that this year, upcoming year, he will be a better player. I think the expectation for the Cavs is that he is what they acquired him to be, which is a defender who can defend 1-2s and 3s, who can hit some 3s and can do a little bit of creation. I think they're going to ask him to be a nominal point guard. I think with Jordan McRae, you know, that quote-unquote experiment being over, as we've talked about, I think that signals that Amon Shumpert is going to get some reps there. I think he is really the most important piece on the bench this year. And I think that's kind of where we're at with him. You look at the starting lineup, it's going to be Kyrie, J.R. Smith, LeBron, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson. You look at the bench, you have, obviously, Kay Felder, McRae, Channing Frye, you know, Birdman, Richard Jefferson, and Mike Dunleavy. But if you look at where the league is at, and, you know, the ages of Dunleavy and the ages of Jefferson, I think there's a lot of pressure on Shumpert to really deliver, to really be the player the Cavs acquired him to be. That means hitting threes, that means defending, that means doing a bunch of different things that we haven't really seen him do yet. So him getting to the point where he can be consistent for 82 games, be good in the playoffs, hit threes, defend, and create a little bit, that is, I think, what the Cavs expect out of him. If you're looking for stats, I'd, you know, expect him to play 25 minutes a game, maybe. That seems pretty reasonable, especially if they're going to limit LeBron's minutes a little bit. He can play some backup three. He did last year. If they go Kyrie, J.R., Shump, sometimes that's going to, that you should expect that. And he, you know, he was under 30% from three last year. I don't expect him to ever be a knockdown shooter. I wouldn't expect him to ever get up to, let's say, 40% or something crazy. But if he can get up to 33, you get up to there, maybe 35 if everything goes right, that is ideal for Shump. And you don't want him taking a lot of attempts, but you want defenses to at least have to know that he's there and not just completely abandon him. When it comes to the playoffs, they may ultimately do that, but teams may do that, but you need him to kind of be the best version of himself. And think about this, when you get to the finals, and let's say they play the Warriors like we expect them to, having a guy like Shumpert on the floor is going to be just so key, because you need to defend all those positions. You need a guy who can help LeBron with KD at times, maybe throw him on Steph, you throw him on Klay, you need him on Shumpert, and you need him to hit threes, because he's going to probably get some open looks if he's playing in the finals and playing big minutes in the playoffs at all. So you need him to kind of be that guy. You need him to just be a little bit better than he was last year, and maybe a lot better than he was last year. I think most importantly, he needs to be able to shoot. And I think secondly, being healthy, and all those work together, but he needs to be a guy who makes an impact on this Cavs team. I really think there's a chance, and at least an argument to be made, that he's the most important bench player for the Cavs. That's maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's Channing Frye, maybe it's Richard Jefferson creating that magic again, but we'll have to see. So that's it for today. Thanks again for all those questions. This was, I think, the most questions we've gotten so far, so keep sending them in. Again, you can send them on Twitter to @LockedOnCavs or to my Twitter @CWMWrites. You can send them via email to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. You can drop them onto our Facebook page. You can find @LockedOnCavs. So as always, we'll be back tomorrow on Tuesday for another podcast. Make sure you find us on Twitter @LockedOnCavs, as I said. Please give us a rating and review on iTunes. It helps other people find the show. Give us those 5 stars, please. We love you if you do it. Tomorrow I'll be reading a review, so if you want to maybe hear your name on the show, go leave us a great review and a rating on iTunes. So thanks again. We'll be back tomorrow. This has been Locked On Cavs. This has been Chris Manning, and have a great rest of your Monday.